Welcome to Satiate, a women's integrative health and soulful living podcast, and a place where you can explore your path to greater peace, joy, and personal liberation with food and life. I'm Sue Van Rays, and I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm the founder of Boulder Nutrition here in Boulder, Colorado. I'm a functional nutritionist, food psychology specialist, yoga instructor, and author of two books. I also lead women's wellness and yoga retreats, both locally and internationally. It is my mission and my absolute passion to support healing the feminine through food, mind-body connection, and pleasure. Because how we eat is how we live. There's no separation. So I created Satiate as a place to explore all different kinds of potent conversations, leading you and me deeper and deeper into the wisdom that lives inside of us. This place, our true nature, is always wise, always well, and always whole. And it can act as our North Star in everything we do. I also am so excited to explore the very ingredients that will serve you in cultivating a liberating, joyful, and satiating experience with both what you eat and how you live. And most of all, if you are here, you know that as you satiate all levels of your being, body, mind, heart, and soul, you not only fill up your internal well, but you also have more to give to your great circles of life. If you love this podcast, be sure to subscribe by hitting the little plus sign at the top of your podcast screen so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. And please leave a review. This helps me so much to ensure that this podcast can find its way to those women who need it most. Thank you so much for being here with me, and I'm so excited to share Satiate with you. I want to introduce you to today's special guest, Stephanie Mara Fox, who is a somatic nutritional counselor and mentor with a master's degree in somatic psychotherapy. She is the creator of Somatic Eating, a body-oriented, sensation-focused therapeutic approach to eating. She has supported women, coaches, and wellness professionals all over the world, helping them heal from disordered eating patterns, binge eating, emotional eating, chronic dieting, and body image concerns. She has been working for over the past decade to guide women in feeling empowered in their relationship with food and body. Stephanie is published in the International Body Psychotherapy Journal, featured in Somatic Psychotherapy Today, Voyage Denver, Elephant Journal, Authority Magazine, and Your Recovery Revealed Summit. She is a teacher at the Institute for the Psychology of Eating and has supervised thousands of mind-body eating coaches. Stephanie is on a mission to guide others into a safe and regulated relationship with food so they can go out and create their satiated life. And I hope you love this conversation as much as I loved meeting and chatting with Stephanie. We have so much in common, including the fact that our podcasts are named Satiate, Where You Are Now, and hers, which is called Satiated. So let's dive into this very robust and super sweet conversation together. Wow, Stephanie, it is great to finally meet you after so many overlapping places in our journeys and in our careers. And I'm so excited to host you on Satiate today. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to connect with you. And I just think it's amazing how much overlap there is just in our journeys and that we're just meeting now.
I know, it's so interesting. And I think, you know, looking back on really just the last year or so, I don't even know if it's been that long, since I first saw that you were working with the same book coach that I was working with. And then that led me down your Instagram and we realized we had all these similar qualities within our work. And then the funny part is that we both have podcasts named Satiate and Satiated, which is even more funny because that was just like the cherry on top. So it's great to be able to like, you know, just kind of come together and see where we connect and what we can learn from each other and the whole thing. I'm just really excited for our conversation.
I know it's really hilarious that I had also heard similarly that, you know, you had a podcast also called, you know, Mind Satiated, yours is Satiate, but it just kind of shows, I feel like if we kind of zoom out for a second, there is this bigger trend happening of individuals. I feel like coming more into contact that their body has to be a part of this conversation when we're talking about relationship with food and our experience inside of our bodies. And so, yeah, like I feel like more and more individuals are picking up on this information.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of similarly to what we were talking about offline, I mean, I believe that's because people are seeing that it works and that that's really true healing in a lot of ways when we're actually, rather than just looking at our symptoms or just trying to fix things from the outside in, like both of your and I approach is really deeply from the inside out on such a visceral and body-centered like perspective. I'm glad that we can be spreading that information to the world because obviously we're in a little dire straits with women, food, body, diet culture, and all the things that just seem to be throwing our systems out of whack as we try to solve these things, you know, with some of the more trendy type approaches. So tell me a little bit about like your journey and how you got here with food and your own story. Cause I know from listening to some of your videos that you have your own compelling story around this experience.
Yeah. So I would say that usually in the past, I have started my journey with talking about how I had kind of severe digestive issues in my early 20s. And I went on this journey, like that was kind of the first hit from my body of, hey, I need to now scream at you. Like I've been trying to talk to you for a really long time, but now I'm going to talk a little bit louder. And so I think for a really long time for me, there was this focus on, I have this digestive issue. Digestive diseases actually run in my family. So it felt very important to me to try and heal this and, you know, work with this digestive upset that I was going through. But honestly, I would say that my journey really started way before that of kind of the trauma and the dysregulation that occurred early on in my life. And so I think that the digestive issues now with the awareness that I have now looking at my history and my past was kind of the way that my body was talking to me of, you haven't been paying attention to me. You still are not paying attention to me. There's still things I'm holding on to. There's still things I'm trying to process here. And so, you know, I went on a journey to try to heal my gut, but really what it brought me to was kind of how much there was a focus on my food and body for a really long time, also as a response to try to navigate just feeling unsafe being inside of my body. And so I think it wasn't until probably, you know, I was like 18, 19 years old when I walked into my first yoga class. And that was my first experience of starting to come into contact with having a body that has emotions and sensations and reactions and is trying to communicate with me. And from there, it really led me down, you know, learning about meditation and, you know, all of the kind of embodiment modalities, mindfulness and, you know, mindful eating and all of that. And then it really was when I was working at a drop-in center for at-risk and homeless youth, and I was the food coordinator there, the individual who I was working with at the time who ran up the activities at the drop-in center was like, you know, you got to look into somatic work. And I was like, what is that? I've never even heard of what that, like what that name is. And, you know, she gave me a book about Naropa, which is the graduate school. I ended up going to Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. And that kind of that 3-year experience through getting my master's degree in somatic psychotherapy was kind of the culmination of everything that I had been through. It was the last thing that kind of I needed to really seriously heal my relationship with my food and my body. And it was this somatic work in finally coming into contact with my body that made such a huge difference that now, like, you know, over a decade later, basically at the end of my graduate degree, I ended up publishing my thesis, which was How to Cultivate a Relationship with the Gut Brain. And that was the beginnings of my creation of somatic eating, which is now what I call my work now. And it kind of combines everything I've learned along the way in somatics, in nervous system regulation, in parts work, all of these things that, you know, we need to kind of explore. That if we see that our focus on food and body is not actually the problem, it is the way that our body is trying to communicate with us. And when we start to flip that lens a little bit, that actually this is information, it is not a problem to be fixed, we can start to see, oh, wow, like there's nothing wrong with my binge eating. There's nothing wrong with my emotional eating. This has been just the best way that the best tool that I had to try to navigate the dysregulation in my body. And if I can start to see that more as my body's way of communicating with me and not as a problem, no, then we get to start to inviting curiosity and compassion. And, you know, we can only really heal in that relaxation response. So long-winded to say, you know, that's how it brought me here today to do this work that I'm doing one-on-one with people. Also have my own programs, basically supporting other individuals and learning this work of somatic eating.
Amazing. I love how it all kind of like, of course, our stories are so interesting, how like one door opens here and we walk through it and it leads to a whole other thing. And you and I can both probably attest to that in our work, because I know for me, you know, the need for what women have needed as far as my clients has also been such a inspiration for me to move towards that in my own training. It's so, you know, the way that sort of things present themselves, it's like, oh, here, this is what's next. It's so beautiful. And I'm curious, just for the listeners, because I love how you speak about feeling safe in your body. And I would love to know, just to kind of give us a few examples, like, what would you say it feels like to feel unsafe in your body? Or what does it feel like to feel safe in your body? And I know that you and I could both answer that, but I feel as though some people might not have that languaging in their terminology. And I'd love to just kind of define terms for people as we get going.
Yeah, great question. Absolutely. And so I feel like first we have to bring in that we have cues of threat and cues of safety in our environment all the time. The example that I like to give is I have an air purifier that's constantly running in my office. And sometimes like I kind of cue into that and I'm like, oh, like it's really making just the air smell good. And I'm so glad that that's running and it's a cue of safety. Where other times, you know, it kind of makes that whirring noise like all day long, where if I'm feeling overwhelmed and I just like need it to be quiet, if I pick up on that noise, kind of experience it as a cue of threat. And basically how it feels different in the body is when we're picking up cues of threat. And sometimes what I find is that when we're struggling in our relationship with food, we're picking up maybe too many cues of threat all the time in our environment. And that can feel contractive. You know, it can affect our breath where our breath is really shallow. It can affect our posture where we're kind of even slumping or like our shoulders feel really heavy. It's like hard to hold ourselves up. You know, it might feel like a little bit of like brain fog or, you know, tightness and tension. Whereas when we get kind of a cue of safety, you know, that can more feel like it's easier to breathe in our body, like the breath is coming in and out at a nice pace and deep breath in our bellies. You know, we feel like our shoulders are easily on our back. It's easier to kind of sit up tall. We feel like there's not really, we're holding not a lot of tension in like our face, you know, like the crease in between your eyebrows, you know, is really soft. I always kind of reference that one because, you know, if I frown, like that's also a tension place for me, you know, so it just kind of feels like there's more ease in our body when we feel safe in it. And for anyone listening, you can kind of think of a moment in time where when you think about that, it puts you in a relaxation response because our body doesn't know the difference between real or perceived. And so even when you're thinking about an experience that you just loved being in, your body is living in that experience again. It's remembering it because we hold memories in every muscle of our being. And so if you remember, you know, one that always comes up for me is kind of going to a beach that we would always go to when I was a kid. And so I can remember the sounds of kids running on the, you know, boardwalk, and I can remember the seagulls like cawing, and I can remember the sounds of the waves and like how the air felt on my skin. And as soon as I start remembering that, oh, I feel lightness in my chest. Like I notice that my cheeks get a little flushed just thinking about that. You know, I feel like my shoulders can relax and my belly also. You know, I'm very aware now, just having gone through years of digestive issues, like I'm very aware of what my belly is doing. My belly even relaxes when I think of that. So, you know, even just if you are finding that, you know, especially because of the intensity of the past couple of years that we've been in, I feel like all of us are kind of navigating a little bit of a trauma response in our bodies. And so even if you can remember a time before kind of the last 3 years and bring that inside of your body, you can kind of start to remember, oh, this is what relaxation and safety feels like in my system.
Yeah. I love those examples of how to bring yourself there too, that are really like buried within our own cellular memory. If we can access those positive memories and experiences and sensations, it's so helpful to have something, I think, that we can go to where we don't even have to really start from scratch every time, but like just like your beach, you know, you have that in your thought pattern already, so you can reach for it as needed. Sometimes I like to have like a ring or a necklace that reminds me of something to kind of drop me into that as well, and as like a resource. But I love your explanation and thank you for kind of like diving into that on like sensorial level. Maybe it's a good time just to kind of talk about what you call somatic eating and how you trademarked that name. It is kind of integral to your business. And, you know, can you circle back to that and define what that means for us?
Yeah. So in a really simple, just one sentence way, somatic eating is a body-oriented, sensation-focused kind of therapeutic approach to eating. And what that basically means is that oftentimes we're approaching our relationship with food from a dysregulated state and from what we've been taught about what we're supposed to eat, how we're supposed to eat. And all of that can be tied into also trying to control our bodies. So, yeah. You know, we have to kind of start to put more trust back into the body and start to interact with food from more of this place of safety. But that can actually, there's a lot of steps between like, you know, dysregulated relationship with food to safe relationship with food. And so in that process, we have to start to learn also like what dysregulates us, you know, what does dysregulation even feel like in our body? And, you know, sometimes if we're talking about like nervous system states, we actually have to learn what fight, flight, and freeze feel like in our body before we can even move into safe relationship with food or even knowing what relaxation response feels like in our body. Because I find that when we start having empowered awareness of like, oh, okay, I know I am in a freeze response right now. I'm shut down. I feel like I just want to reach for food to try to bring sensation back into my body again. We start to see that our food impulses are actually information of the state that our body is in. And so we have to first learn, like, what do these things even feel like? So sometimes it's, we're so kind of like enmeshed in it of like, we're so deep in it, we don't even know we're experiencing it. And so I find even bringing like the self-witness online of, we can be both in a freeze or fight or flight response and actually be a witness to it. Oh, I know this is where I'm at right now. And as soon as, you know, in some research, you know, with Dr. Daniel Siegel, he talks about how, you know, when we start bringing language to emotion, it actually moves us from our amygdala to our prefrontal cortex, where that's where we do our rational, logical thinking, where we feel like we have more choice. You can choose food and you can also choose something else as well. But we have to first bring that awareness in of where am I at? Where is my body at? How is actually me wanting to reach for food information from my body? Or how is actually me wanting to restrict my intake or me getting worried about how my body looks today? Information that my body already doesn't feel safe. And so once we start bringing that awareness online, then we can be a little bit more playful with like, oh, okay, this is just where I'm at. There's like so much more acceptance that gets to start to come in instead of judgment and shame that can kind of keep us stuck in a cycle where it's, you know, we judge ourselves for having the impulse to reach for food. Then we reach for food anyway to try to make ourselves feel better. Then we judge ourselves for reaching for the food and it, you know, just keeps cycling over and over again. So, you know, we have to kind of pop out of that cycle to say, okay, I have the urge to reach for food. That's not wrong. That's not bad. That's not a problem. Can I actually approach this with a lot of compassion that that's coming up for a reason? And, you know, then you just get that choice of like, I can reach for food. And what, like you were talking about, you know, having something on you, what are your other resources? That I find that oftentimes food has maybe become our only resource to feel safe and regulate. But when we get this experience of it can be one of your resources, but we need to start to build on and have more resources online for you so that you feel that sense of choice, which can also be very healing in trauma as well. Because usually trauma took away our sense of choice. And just in that experience of bringing it back on, you know, we can start to say, okay, you can feel safe, body, you are not living in that past experience that you've been through. We are now here where I'm going to protect you. I'm going to show up for you. And like, we can navigate this situation together.
Yeah. One question I have for you in your work around this nervous system piece, the fight, flight, freeze, fawn response. How I perceive it, and maybe you have a different perception than me, is that, you know, our systems tend to have a default pattern within that trauma response. Like for me, you know, as much work as I do around it, you know, freeze is something I'm just going to naturally go towards, unless it involves my kids. And then I can turn into like a fighter pretty quickly, but, which is a funny thing because it is two different responses. But in most cases, in my trauma responses, I've really been working with the freeze response as like my kind of the pathway that's the most well used in my own system and how that plays out with my eating. How would you say that you talk about it as far as something similar with those kind of automatic responses being embedded?
Yeah, what you're talking about makes me think of one of my teachers, Deb Dana, who's one of like the main teachers in polyvagal theory. She calls it your home away from home. So, you know, your main home is originally like that relaxation response, you know, feeling safe and protected in the world. And then we kind of have all of these life experiences that could have happened from the time that you did come out in the world. If, you know, your birth experience was difficult and maybe traumatic, that, you know, yes, we have kind of that home away from home where I am also very similar, where I know freeze response very well. So I would definitely say also that freeze response is my home away from home. I know how to just disassociate, peace out, I'm out of here. And, you know, like, I know that so well that there's some comfort there. And I agree that it's also starting to bring in a lot of compassion, even when that happens, of, oh, I'm doing this because this actually feels comfortable. This is in my comfort zone. This is what makes me feel safe, is going to this freeze response or going to this fight or flight response, and not even seeing that as wrong. And I find that, you know, the analogy that sometimes I like to make is, okay, let's say, you know, either if you are a parent, or, you know, you've been around a lot of babies, you know, that sometimes a baby can't regulate. like you wake up and they're crying and, you know, you try and, okay, are you hungry? Okay, we're not hungry. They're still crying. Okay, you try and change their diaper. Yep. Okay, we're still upset. You put them in the car, you drive them around. They're still upset. That some days, regardless of how many regulating things we try to do, it's going to feel just really hard to maybe come back to that sense of safety, that that's not even a problem either. That it's the practice of continuing to show up for ourselves again and again and again, regardless of where our nervous system state is, and saying, I'm not going to self-abandon. I'm not going to leave myself just because this is what I'm experiencing today. Not even labeling it as a bad day, just because maybe you feel a little like unstable inside of your body. It's okay. I don't know. And also we don't need to know. You know, I find a lot of the times, and I kind of have this conversation even with those that I work with, that it's like, well, don't I need to remember? Don't I need to know what triggered me? Don't I need to know why I'm doing this? And I'm like, yeah, we can explore that. But you actually don't need to know, because what's true and what's real is what your body is telling you right here and right now. It is upset. And so the practice is, would really like support your body in feeling more heard and seen? Maybe a little, but what would maybe support it in feeling heard and seen is, hey, yeah, it's okay that you're having a hard time today. I'm here for you. Okay, you need food. Let's have a meal. Okay, do you need to take a shower? Do we need to get outside? Do we need to do some physical movement? So I think it's also with this kind of nervous system regulation, I think there's also this idea that the goal is always to be like this, you know, calm, serene, relaxed individual. And I think that's really impossible, because we all go out of regulation and dysregulation every single day, every single person, even every coach, counselor, and therapist you interact with, they have the same thing that they're going through as well. And so I think the practice is really, how can I show up regardless of what's happening inside of my body, and also potentially not experiencing that anymore as a threat? Because I find that when we start trying to say, okay, it's bad or wrong that I feel this way, then the body starts moving into that, oh, threat, like it's even threatening or dangerous to feel what I'm feeling. And then food comes in to emotionally eat or binge eat, or even just, you know, whatever it is that your pattern is. It could be over-exercising. It could be restricting, however kind of that perceived sense of control with your body, like our food and body behaviors come in to try to help us feel safe. But if we don't experience whatever is happening inside of the body as threatening to begin with, we might not need those food or body behaviors as much to help us feel safe and secure.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You said something that I really, like a lot of things that I really loved, but one that I just want to kind of touch on, which is, you know, the very first part of what you were sharing was how, when we are aware of a pattern in our body and what it does to our hunger, fullness, cravings, etc., it can really help to remove a layer of what a lot of people I work with, a lot of women I work with, consider to be a shameful response. And what I've noticed and what I love about digging into this deeper layer of the nervous system, and really how that even intermingles with ghrelin and leptin, our hunger and fullness hormones, and how just a bad night of sleep, one bad night of sleep, can throw your ghrelin levels into a like tailspin, where you're all of a sudden craving comfort food and you don't know why. And I know for that, you know, that happened a lot over the past few years with people and their stress levels and the pandemic, and why so many people were eating comfort food during lockdown times and things like that. But also the guilt that people were carrying around it was, you know, too much. And so when we have an understanding of like biochemistry to a certain degree in our systems, and like what those different situations and those different, you know, kind of like the perfect storms, what they can actually create in our bodies, it can really help us to like forgive ourselves. I mean, we're really, some of this is just seriously biochemistry, And we can't control that by just liking our biochemistry or not liking our biochemistry. And so thank you for kind of bringing that forward. I really appreciate that piece.
Yeah, there's a cool study that I can send the link to you as well, that I think oftentimes like diet culture really teaches us that we're in control of our body. Like, you know, just eat this thing, you know, move your body this much and you can control your body, which we know is really not true. And what this kind of compilation of studies that this group brought in was how like small percentage actually what we eat like predicts yeah. our health and our well-being. And we put so much more emphasis mm-hmm. on that, but actually there are so many other factors absolutely that go along with our sense of safety in our body that maybe aren't even in our control. Like we did not have control over what we were going through over the past couple of years and how unsafe that felt. But I think it really brought forward of how little we're taught even from a young age of how to be with how we're processing our external world.
Mm-hmm.
Like even just saying, okay, yes, I had a bad night of sleep and here's what I know of what my body is going to be navigating today. And just bringing in, yeah, that forgiveness and that compassion of this isn't my fault. Oh, it makes a lot of sense that I want to reach for that right now. Just right. even knowing like, this is just what's happening and it's not a problem. I'm not something to be fixed.
Absolutely. It gives us like that ability in a way to just allow ourselves humanness, which I think so many different kinds of messaging coming our way, especially from diet culture, isn't really honoring that aspect of ourselves. And so when we can find a way through to like a deeper understanding of what's actually happening, free from that external judgment from society or what we perceive is from society, it really can shift our internal experience. And I love you have a quote that I've seen you use. Your eating and your body image concerns are not the problem, they are the answer. I'd love to hear you speak about that a little bit.
Yeah. So first, I think that oftentimes what I've seen with those that I've worked with is there's this idea, and look, I was there too. You know, I've gone through the diets and the restricting and the binge eating and all the things. And so I think that there's this idea that that's actually the problem, that if I just get my eating under control, everything else is going to fall into place, that this is a food issue. And if we can start to actually experience that what is playing out with your food and your body is a doorway into yourself, it's like those images that I see, you know, if anybody listening to this has also seen these kind of images where there's like the iceberg, like those kind of memes. And it's like, okay, tip uh-huh. of the iceberg. Like this is yeah. what you think is going on. It's like, okay, the binge eating, the dieting, the restricting, the emotional eating, you know, the overexercising, like all those things. But then underneath the surface, underneath the water, there's all these other things that actually those things are calling to you. That's your body's way of communicating to you. Your body doesn't talk to you through words. It can only talk to you through impulses and urges and sensations and emotions. And so if we can see that our food impulses are actually our body's way of saying, I need your attention. Can you talk to me? Like, can you hold space mm-hmm. for me? Like something's coming up for me that I need you. And I know that I'll get your attention by you thinking about food. And so, you know, and like we have paid attention over and over and over again. Oh my gosh, I have this urge to go reach for this food. And how many times have you paid attention to that? Like that is information. Like your body's like, oh, you're going to pay attention to me if you start thinking about this. Okay, cool. Like, hey, I need your attention. All right, I'm going to send it up to the brain. Can you think about like this food right now? Because I know that you will start attending to me, even if it's, you know, in more of a, my mother would always say this, even negative attention is attention.
Definitely. I was just thinking about that when you were talking about it, because I was having a conversation the other day about this exact phenomenon of negative attention and how, you know, we've been doing that. We know, watch our kids do that, but we can do that with ourselves. And it works to a point of getting the attention. It just might not give us the outcome we want in the big picture, but yes, it's so important to recognize that, you know, we have that, you know, slew of inner child, different kinds of personas within us, which, you know, many of them, I'm thinking for most of us, and there are going to be the ones that are going to act out to get our attention and need to kind of come back home to that place of safety with like your higher self to be able to regulate, but not always happening if we're not aware that we can do that for ourselves, or even that we can sort of reparent ourselves in that way. So yeah, thank you for that.
Totally on the same page with that. Yeah, absolutely. And so it can be really, really different to start to experience that your food and body impulses are actually body wisdom.
Totally.
So I feel like a lot of the time, you know, with even those I work with, they'll come to me being like, no, this is a problem. Like, this needs to be fixed. How could you possibly say like, this is trying to support me in some way or protect me in some way? It feels mm-hmm. like it's the problem that is dangerous and threatening and I need to fight mm-hmm. this. So I think that it takes some time to adopt this new perspective of that this is actually your body's wisdom, your body's communication, and that if we can actually start to slow down and listen to these urges and these impulses from our body, we can start to hear what our body is trying to teach us and tell us and what it needs. And, you know, sometimes like from a really young age, we can get those physical and emotional hungers crossed.
Oh, for sure.
And so it's starting to kind of uncross them a little bit and just say like, okay, here's my physical hunger. Here's my emotional hunger. And like, am I actually physically hungry right now? If the answer is no, it's like, okay, what is my body trying to relay to me through telling me it wants me to reach for food?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think untangling those two things is a really, really powerful process because, you know, I love the idea. I think I got it from Don Miguel Ruiz in his book, Mastery of Love, if I'm not mistaken, but, you know, he puts it so eloquently because our minds are never truly hungry, truly, like in the true sense of the definition, nor are they ever satiable. And so whenever we come up against that, not to say that they don't need and want comfort by any means, but it's a really interesting distinction to be able to recognize what is physical hunger, what is mind hunger or emotional hunger, and to be able to at least consciously choose, because consciously choosing to eat when we're emotionally hungry is not a sin, but it surely seems like we have put it into that category in our culture. But yet so many people are doing it. Most people are, I think actually, I'd like to take that back. All people are doing it. It's just a matter of to what degree. So, you know, that kind of segues nicely into one of the questions I wanted to ask you. And it's always so interesting to, you know, talk to other people in the field of food psychology and body-centered eating, because, you know, I'm sure we each have our own ways of working with this, but how do you best suggest working with that type of emotional hunger or emotional eating?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different approaches and different things that you can explore.
That was a big question.
No, it's okay. I want to actually bring it around to something that you were pointing to just a bit ago around just these parts of us. And that, yeah, like, you know, this comes a lot from even internal family systems and starting to get to know the different parts and pieces of you, because they all have different wants and needs. And so, you know, for example, the example that I often like to give is that, you know, growing up, when I would get sick, my mom would always give me the same meal. It was scrambled eggs with a piece of toast and ginger ale. like every single time without fail, that's what she would feed me when I would get sick and tuck me into her bed. And so if I notice myself potentially not feeling quite well, I might crave one of those things, not necessarily because that's actually what my body wants or needs in my present day body with my present day self, but I get to check in and be like, ooh, my inner child really wants some motherly love right now. And I think that's kind of a way that we can get also curious with our food cravings of who, where is this coming from? Who is wanting this? And we can start to, you know, communicate with those parts of ourselves that it's not necessarily about the food itself. It's about what we think we will get from that food. Yeah. And that's where we can start to tap into some of these emotional hungers, and that it's completely normal to have emotional hungers. Like you were saying, you know, absolutely, I agree with you. We all emotionally eat. Like, let's just kind of normalize that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And you know, it's also, we all have all these parts and pieces of ourselves that want to feel held and seen and heard and acknowledged, and that their life matters and that they're important. We all want that at our core of just human beings. And so not even to make those emotional hungers wrong or bad, but also getting curious, is there some other non-food way that we can meet that and start to kind of satisfy, or the word that we both love to use, satiate, yes, you know, exactly, that emotional hunger in these kind of non-food ways. Now, you can still use food, but, you know, food can only sometimes take us so far when it comes to satisfying emotional hunger.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. It's so interesting to start to look like another big piece of question I have that I'm always working on, which kind of segues nicely from here, is like, when we are more fulfilled, or back to our word, satiated in our lives. And I've seen this so often with my clients, but one of my best experiments, actually, even beyond that, is in my own kids. When I've seen this so much, when my kids are fulfilled and excited and inspired and feeling like really on point with what they're up to, there's less of a focus on the food piece because they're getting filled up in all these other ways in their lives. And, you know, as soon as things are a little stagnant, or things would get a little bit, you know, blah or boring, or things weren't going quite as well, I noticed right away this, like, you know, food became the centerpiece of the conversation. Like, what are we having for dinner? Or can we make this? Or can we do that? Or like, it became like the source of pleasure and the source of filling ourselves up, which it makes perfect sense. And at the same time, I also see a world where so many people are in this like mundane, ordinary, slightly robotic existence because we're sort of just going through the motions a lot of the time and not really feeling fulfilled. And then we see our relationship to food really take the brunt. Do you have any kind of tidbits on that?
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking while you were talking of, even if you can take a moment to pause, and I know that sounds so simple, but it's so hard to do, to kind of zoom out. And even like that situation that you're talking about, okay, there's like this over-focus on food in the family right now. And can I bring in a lot of curiosity right now of what's been going on in the family unit? Like, what's been going on with each person in the family unit? And seeing that even as when there is a focus on food starts to come in, what am I eating? What am I eating for dinner? Like, what should we eat later? You know, that, oh, wow, that's really interesting. You know, even just bringing in just that gentle, kind curiosity of, again, that's just information, not even seeing it as bad or wrong, that now all of a sudden there's like this focus on food that's happening, but it's okay. There's some dysregulation happening. Our stress levels starting to get a little bit high, or, you know, even the term of like window of tolerance, like we all have our window of what we're able to flow with and tolerate. And are we starting to go above that or below that, you know, that like, oh, this just feels like too much right now. And actually it might feel easier to focus on what am I having for lunch than the thing that actually feels out of our control. Because yeah, it is in your control to choose what you have for lunch or dinner. And maybe there's something going on in your partnerships or relationships or friendships or at work that isn't in your control, that you know, sometimes thank goodness that we have our relationship with food, that we will be in relationship with our entire lives. That's there to also say, well, I have choice here. Here's where I can, you know, have a little bit of a sense of control. And again, it just gets to be information that even if that's happening, it's okay. But also starting to kind of say, okay, you know, all right, there's a big focus on food happening right now. So yes, I can choose what I want to have for my next meal. And that is also my body telling me it needs a little bit, maybe more like regulating support right now.
Yeah, I love that. It's also, you know, kind of comes back to, I think, what one thing you and I both agree on, which is that food is like an incredible reflection or mirror of what else is going on in our lives. And there's very few other things that are that intimately connected to our deep sense of self than how we nourish ourselves and how we take care of our bodies. And so it's interesting to just be able to, you know, sort of take that cue as a opportunity for further investigation with just a neutral perspective on like, okay, what is this about and how can we best serve ourselves in this path of looking deeper into the sort of metaphorical relationship we have with food that is so, so important and so vast. And we'll save that for the podcast, but that's probably a whole other episode. But you know, it's a wild journey to really start to untangle ourselves from our relationship to food and to see these deeper aspects of ourselves reflected so clearly in how that plays out in our day to day.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Absolutely. And you know, what it also makes me think of is, you know, really starting to just delabel it all. Mm-hmm. You know, so often we think of this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. This is a bad emotion to feel. This is a good emotion to feel. This is a bad food to eat. This is a good food to eat. And just kind of saying, this is.
Yeah.
This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I'm choosing to eat. To start to be able to at least have the space to come into closer contact with yourself without the added extra layer of judgment on top.
Completely. Yeah. It's a teacher, right? Our relationship to food is such a teacher. I was writing recently and this sort of came out when I was writing, and it's so interesting because you just touched right on it, which is, you know, we have these good emotions and these bad emotions. But really, when we start to look at that variety, you know, for the four primary emotions, just to kind of keep it simple, I mean, only one of them is good. I mean, in our stigmatized world, right? Like fear isn't considered to be good, and neither is anger, and neither is sadness. And so we're left with like, okay, we'll try to orient towards joy and happiness, but how realistic is that? And when I sort of put that on paper and looked at it, I'm like, so 25% of our emotion, happiness, is considered to be positive. And so here we are like already in a deficit because it's impossible to always stick with that one emotion and probably flat after a while as well, even though most of us would probably not want to have to go through the life lessons to really learn that over and over again. But it just kind of all kind of comes back to like the common logical sense that I think both of us are speaking to, which is like our humanness, the reality of all the different aspects within our eating that don't need to be a place of shame because they are just what they are. Just like our emotions are just what they are and our biochemistry is just what it is. And I think when we start to like choose a different battle, if a battle at all, but you know, kind of lay down the sword around that a little bit because it just seems like futile. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, thank you for just mentioning that because I've been thinking about that one a lot lately.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's such an excellent point to kind of address that. Yeah, how much of the time are we trying to solely live in an emotion that's only potentially 20% of our entire, you know, technicolored rainbow experience of emotions that we can have? And yeah, when you put it that way, it's like, oh, wow, we're really trying to live in this very small box that, of course, then food would then try to come in to help us break out of that box a little bit, to even just feel something else. Because we want to, like, the body loves to feel and be in movement and have experiences. And when we're trying to just only have this one experience, at some point the body's going to take over and say, like, I need something else.
Yeah. Yeah. A little reality check type of a moment for sure. Oh, awesome. Well, I would love to hear, and I know that, like, there's so much to your work and there's so much more. And for the sake of time and for the sake of kind of keeping it this in a way that people might have the ability to have some takeaways to walk away with after listening today, you know, I'm curious with, like, your specific style of somatic eating and, you know, what you teach, where would you say are the best places to start as far as kind of like beginner strategies for people who want to move in that direction and maybe want to try a couple things at home?
Yeah. So two things come to mind. First is giving yourself small moments to explore a body impulse and allow yourself to follow that. So that could be, you're just sitting on your couch and you kind of check in and ask your body, body, is there anything you want to do right now? And even if it's like, I just want to raise my left hand, you don't have to understand why you want to do that. But what would it be like just to be like, okay, for some reason, I just want to do this right now. And you go and you raise your left hand and you follow that impulse and you allow it just to be there and notice what that feels like to actually sequence that through your body. So I think just even coming into contact with your body in a really like micro, small, safe way and noticing the things that feel even safe to meet a need that has maybe nothing to do with food, that doesn't overwhelm you, that's really small. It could also even be just like coming into contact with a body part that you don't have a lot of emotion around. You know, sometimes when we're trying to heal our relationship with our food and our body, there are some body parts that maybe are more intense emotionally to focus on. And so let's say like your finger, you know, you don't have really a lot of emotions about one of your fingers and just seeing like, what does this finger feel like right now? What does it feel like when I move this finger? Like that can be just a really safe way to start to come into relationship with your body, because often where this journey is leading to and healing our relationship with food is coming back into relationship with our body. Because if food is the doorway to the body, we can start to say, okay, I maybe don't need food to have the doorway into the body. I can just connect with my body. And so finding really small ways to do that. And I think the other thing that comes to mind is what we were just talking about. It's just very slowly starting to take pauses throughout a day to check in with yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, how often, if you can kind of reflect for yourself, do you check in like the middle of the day? You know, so often we might wake up, check in a little bit. How did I sleep last night? Get on with our day. And then we don't check in again until the end of the day where it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so exhausted. And now I'm so overwhelmed with everything that I might have been processing or coming up with me throughout a day that, you know, oftentimes a lot of our food behaviors can also happen in those afternoon, evening hours as well. So even if you can just start to incorporate one pause in the middle of the day to check in with yourself and just name how you feel. You know, whatever it is, I'm stressed, I'm overwhelmed, I'm joyful, I'm excited, just to come into contact with what is and say, even if it's like, I feel the urge to reach for food right now. Okay, that's okay that that's happening as well. You know, just these little pauses so that you start to come in a relationship with yourself and it's okay to feel how you feel. It's really okay to have the impulses and the urges that you're having. You know, from that pause, then you might bring in that curiosity. You know, I always kind of get this image of a snowball. Like as soon as we come into contact with ourselves, we can't then be unaware of what we're aware of.
Right.
And so it starts to snowball on itself of when we touch in with ourselves. You know, things will just start shifting and moving and changing just in reaction of being like, oh, you're paying attention to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the pause. It's the most precious and accessible, but yet sometimes inaccessible thing. Yeah. But I think when we bring our attention to it, it can really be such a game changer in how we orient. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just to kind of wrap it up, and I love this question, but I think it's even funnier that you're here for it because of our Oh, word. But that is, you know, what does it mean to be satiated to you?
Yeah, it's funny because I talk a lot just in somatic eating of where this work is going to is creating your satiated life. Yeah. And, you know, what I kind of describe that is feeling like you are in alignment with how you are satiating your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual hungers. And feeling that you are satisfying those in a way that actually make you feel more connected to yourself, and that it's easier to come inside of your body and feel like you can kind of live authentically in your life. Because sometimes we are using one, I'll call it tool, to satisfy or satiate a hunger where that's never going to satiate that hunger. You know, we can choose food to satisfy an emotional hunger, but it never really does it long term. And so it's kind of starting to feel like living this satiated life that you can hear your hungers, all of them, there's many of them, all different kinds, and say, oh, it's okay that I have this. And what is going to be the thing that is going to most satiate this kind of hunger that is showing up right now? And I find that once we start meeting those emotional needs in more aligned ways, that we just feel like more of that safety, secure relaxation response in our body, that regardless of what shows up in our system, we know we can navigate that. We know we're going to have our own back.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Thank you so much for that. That's great. A great answer. And it's so lovely to spend this time talking and sharing and also getting to know your work more and getting to know you more. And I am so grateful for this opportunity to connect. So just so much love and so much gratitude for you and all of your wisdom. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled we got to connect. It's always such a joy and really just an honor to connect with someone who's doing such similar work in the world, because it is work that's really needed. And so I'm really excited that, you know, we found each other and that we got to connect today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.